From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, October 8th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Either yourself, defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says be bold in what you stand for and careful what you fall for. Yeah, an old classic there. Otherwise, you better have some good friends to stand with you and catch you when you fall. Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh,
just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
Oh, stop with that. Nobody's buying that anymore. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1921, KDKA Pittsburgh conducted the first live broadcast of a football game in Pittsburgh's Forbes Field. Now, I have no proof of this, but I'm sure it would be safe to assume that this was also where the first broadcast of a beer commercial took place. Less filling. Tastes great. And it was on this day in 1974, Franklin National Bank collapsed due to fraud and mismanagement. Well, the business collapsed. The building is still there. Oddly enough, the building was the only thing left afterward. And at the time, it was the largest bank failure in the history of the United States. Until the savings and loan business went under several years later. Money. It's a terrible thing to lose.
Money, money, money.
When Hillary Clinton speaks, people listen in horror. Trying to figure out just where the hell this woman came from. She lived a pretty posh lifestyle when she was growing up. Her parents were fairly well off. Sent her to good schools where she became a staunch leftist. And man, you look at her history. Good God, the woman has been a radical her entire life. Radical leftist. And if you're looking for something representing evil, I mean, sure, we've got the Soros boys, Alex, the son of George Soros and George his own self. But man, nobody to me epitomizes or is the poster child for evil more than Hillary Clinton, and now she's calling for censorship. Now, it was one thing to suggest it, and she spent a lot of years suggesting it, but now she's coming right out into the open, and she told CNN host Michael Smirkanish that while there have been some steps taken at the state level to regulate social media, she wants to see more done by the federal government to moderate content. To moderate. Well, it's just a polite word for censor, right? Well, if we allow censorship, you have just trashed the First Amendment, one of the key points upon which this nation's Constitution was written. Freedom of speech. Now, you have the people on the left who are constantly whining.
Yes, but that means that you're protecting hate speech.
Yeah, I guess we are, aren't we? We're protecting hate speech because we believe that you're smart enough to understand what is and isn't hate speech and to be able to react accordingly. Simple tenet right there. I mean, look at how the government is screwing up everything in our daily lives. Look at how FEMA, which stands for failure to effectively manage anything, look at how FEMA has no money to help the hurricane victims because they've spent all the money helping people who broke into our country against our immigration laws. We're housing them, we're giving them education, we're giving them medical care, and there's no money for our own people. And the thing that mystifies me about this whole scenario is the fact that we still have millions and millions of people, particularly those ignorant bastards in Hollywood who want to vote for Kamala Harris for more of this crap. Now, I'm of the firm belief that what's lurking on November 5th may actually be a landslide victory for Donald Trump. It could happen. Because I think a lot of these polls are lying. And I think a lot of the people who are answering polls are lying. They're afraid to admit that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. Now, I have no fears about that. Now, I will not carry a Donald Trump sticker on my car because I don't want my car vandalized. Because that's who the left are. The people on the left are evil. The people on the left are violent. But they do need to be fought somewhere. And the sooner the better. Because if they get more power, which is what Hillary Clinton wants, and her good buddy George Soros, if they get more power, they will one day overpower us, and we can't allow that to happen. So anyhow, Hillary Clinton was talking with this guy, Michael Smirkanish, and I want you to hear this clip right here, because this, I think, is stunning crap.
We should be, in my view, repealing something called Section 230, which gave platforms on the internet immunity because they were thought to be just pass-throughs, that they shouldn't be judged for the content that is posted. But we now know that that was an overly simple view, that if the platforms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter X or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm.
So she's talking about moderating social media sites. Well, it's not moderation. It's called, let's call it what it is, censorship. But you know, I gotta hand it to her. She actually had the cojones to come out and just say what she means. That the government should take over moderation of social media sites. Well, as long as there's an Elon Musk, that'll never happen. It might happen on some sites, but I mean, hey, look at Mark Zuckerberg lately. Have you heard what's come out of his mouth lately? Now, he's not leaning toward Donald Trump, but he's certainly showing his admiration for the man. The fact that he got shot and just got right up and kept on walking. That made a profound impression on Mark Zuckerberg, and now Zuckerberg is starting to rethink this whole thing about government interference in the moderation of social media sites. Now, in that conversation that Clinton had with Michael Smirkanish, she said, we can look at the state of California, the state of New York. I think some other states have also taken action, but we need national action. And sadly, our Congress has been dysfunctional when it comes to addressing these threats to our children. Ah, yes. Now, all of a sudden, the woman who's in favor of partial birth abortion is concerned about our children? God, what a bullcrap artist she is. She said she believes the issue should be at the top of every legislative political agenda, and she called for the repealing of Section 230 of the Communications Act. All right, you already heard that part. But, she's evil. This woman is just pure evil. And you know, don't you? I mean, I'm not bringing you a news bulletin here. You do know, don't you, that if Kamala Harris is elected, Hillary Clinton will be the de facto president. Journalist Catherine Herridge is reporting that newly leaked military memos, I want to use that word, leaked, as a key word here. Newly leaked military memos reveal U.S. military members were exposed to several toxic agents, which include radioactive materials, after Iran launched a ballistic missile attack on their base in January of 2020. Now, along with this, Herridge is also reporting that a retired Army JAG, that's basically a lawyer, is claiming that courts and the Justice Department have now sided with Iran and that service members injured in the attack have been blocked from suing Iran. Oh, stay with me here. This gets better. The article was published by the UK Daily Mail, and it goes on to state that as of this writing, neither President Biden's administration or anyone else has publicly acknowledged that U.S. soldiers were put at risk by exposure to radioactive fallout. The attack on the Al-Asad base was in retaliation for President Trump's issuing a strike on January 3rd, 2020. Remember that? And that was the strike that killed top-ranking Islamic Revolutionary Guard member General Qasem Soleimani. A total of 11 warheads, each one weighing close to 1,600 pounds, hit the airbase. Now, Herridge wrote, quote, Iran's attack on Al-Assad was launched in retaliation for the U.S. strike ordered by former President Donald Trump on January 3, 2020, that killed top Islamic Revolutionary Guard General Qasem Soleimani. Alan Johnson, a retired flight surgeon who was stationed at Al-Asad at the time of the strike, told me, none of us really should have survived, and we weren't expected to survive. Now, the amount of percussive force that travels through your body, you can't really put to words, that Johnson went on to say, before detailing how one of the missiles detonated just 60 feet from a bunker where he'd taken shelter. Now, if you're that close to that kind of a concussion, man, it hurts. It rattles your entire body. And he further elaborated. He says, if you fell off a four-story roof onto your back and survived, that's probably what it felt like. I was knocked unconscious twice from two different impacts. And Herridge continued in her report, I first reported on the Al-Assad attack in 2021 while working at CBS News. Then our investigation revealed that dozens of service members with traumatic brain injuries from the strike were not immediately recognized with the Purple Heart, a military decoration awarded to those wounded or killed while serving. And then she says, after our report, the Army quickly moved to retroactively approve the awards. 3 years later, I've confirmed that some of the same injured service members, now in their 20s and early 30s, are sick, and that they attribute their illness to exposure to fallout from Iran's strike. You know what that means, right? Iran is using nuclear weapons. There's also evidence, which includes samples of soil and army reports, that provide credence for their suspicions. Now, Herridge, who is an excellent independent journalist now, she used to work for Fox, then she went over to CBS, and now she's on her own. And she's doing terrific work. She's one of these rare birds who actually digs up information on her own rather than plagiarizing other sources like I do. Anyhow, she stated that there's an official Army memorandum that was dated April 28th, 2021, that was handed out to service members who were at Al-Asad Air Base during the Iranian missile attack. And there were other memos put out into circulation with the title Exposure to Hazardous and Toxic Materials. Well, part of the document, 2 pages in length, reads, purpose, to identify and record exposure to hazardous and toxic material for all assigned or attached to U.S. Army Special Operations Aviation Command while forward deployed to Al-Asad Air Base, Iraq, from 15 January 2020 to 13 February 2020. Now, Herridge says that members of military personnel who received the memo were then told they needed to keep the document in case they experienced an illness later down the road. So she wrote in the article, these official Army memos provide service members with proof of exposure to toxic materials and can facilitate what's known as a service connection. Verification of service connection enables a soldier to receive financial and medical benefits for illness or injury. On the second page of the memo is a chart labeled Soil Sample Results from 15 January 2020. The January 15th date confirms that the soil sample was taken by U.S. Army investigators 7 days after Iran's attack. And the chart reveals 19 materials, some of which are radioactive elements and heavy metals, all detected in this particular sample. Now, other records have revealed the soil sample was collected near the impact site of a missile that's been labeled Missile 6 by investigators. Drone footage captured of the attack by U.S. Central Command says that Missile 6 is one of the warheads that had a very large heat signature, one of the largest that was used in the strike on the base. So Ms. Herridge revealed, at my request, four independent environmental specialists reviewed the records. Most have experience analyzing military records and conducting toxic exposure evaluations of military sites. Two of the specialists who spoke on background, citing the sensitivity of the subject, raised concerns about radioactive elements, including actinium-228, bismuth-214, and cesium-137, saying they seemed out of place at the site of a conventional explosion. So what was that I said a few minutes ago, suggesting that Iran is using nuclear weapons? They're using them. And then later in the report, Herridge says that a spokesman for the Army stated the materials involved in the assault on Al-Asad Air Base weren't of a high enough level to cause any threat to the soldiers' health. No hazards or chemicals were found to exceed military exposure guidelines, and no elevated risk was identified. Therefore, no active personnel monitoring was deemed necessary. And this is according to the spokesman's statement. Now, for many members of the military, the assurance offered in the statement is lacking. So, Herridge wrote in the report, quote, retired Army Judge Advocate General Lieutenant Colonel Robert Broadbent is now representing 183 plaintiffs who include the former soldiers and their families in a sweeping court case. Broadbent recently retired after 23 years of military service, representing the legal interests of the Army and its soldiers. He told me we're going to have another Agent Orange situation. Now, for younger members of the audience, if you don't know what Agent Orange is, it was a defoliant. It was used in Vietnam by our military to clear away brush and other vegetation that served as shelter for the Viet Cong. And then eventually it was connected to various health conditions like cancer, heart disease, even Parkinson's. In fact, I lost a good friend. My buddy John Heath died of cancer that the medical experts say was more than likely due to his exposure to Agent Orange. Now, 10 years down the road, these service members are going to be out of the military and they're going to be dying. And they're not going to be cared for. Broadbent made that very clear. He then said that he wants to see Iran held accountable for the assault on the base. Though it has been a struggle to make that happen, and it will be. But at least my hat is off to him for fighting that fight, for at least gathering the chutzpah together to do this. And then Herridge said, earlier this year, a federal court broke with longstanding precedent and dismissed his lawsuit. Hansen versus Islamic Republic of Iran. And Broadbent believes that these soldiers are still due their day in court, and he's calling on Congress to amend the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act and allow their lawsuit to go forward. Broadbent said Congress can add one word to the legislation to make clear that nation states are still liable for attacks, such as the strike on Al-Assad. Iran's intent was to kill service members, but miraculously, all the soldiers survived. But I feel it my duty as a veteran, to include the word for now. Yeah. Miraculously, the soldiers survived for now. But are they looking ahead to a slow, agonizing, painful death? Kamala Harris faced deserved criticism following her comments on the escalating tensions in the Middle East during a recent interview on CBS 60 Minutes. You know, with tensions rising between Israel and Iran and concerns of a larger conflict looming, Harris' remarks have drawn attention for, well, their lack of clarity on critical issues. During the interview, she was asked about the situation in the Middle East, where Israel is preparing a significant forthcoming retaliatory strike in response to Iran's missile attacks of about a week ago. And last week, Iran, of course, launched more than 200 missiles. And we saw it all on television in the comfort of our own homes. So Israel, in turn, is getting geared up for a counterstrike against Iran. And you can bet it's going to be a doozy. So when asked about U.S. involvement and its stance on the unfolding events, Harris responded with a statement that's been widely criticized for its vagueness.
The work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
So naturally, she was criticized for that statement, lacking substance and failing to provide a clear U.S. position on the crisis. And believe me, it is a crisis. And one of the key moments in the interview came when Harris was asked directly whether Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is an ally of the United States. And rather than giving a direct answer, she sidestepped the question, saying, I think the better question is, do we have an important alliance between the American people and Israeli people? The answer to that question is yes. Wow. A masterclass in evasiveness. And that noncommittal response sparked further criticism, as well it should, particularly as the relationship between the U.S. and Israel has historically been one of very strong alliance, especially during times of conflict in the region. Now, the interview came as tensions in the Middle East, of course, are really just ramping up. I mean, we've got people talking in terms of, the threshold of World War III here. And the potential for further conflict between Israel and Iran, I would say, is beyond just potential now. I mean, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And the missile strikes, as well as the impending Israeli counterstrike, have raised concerns about the possibility of a broader regional war with some big implications for global security and U.S. foreign policy. And really, that's the root of all this evil right now, is the failing U.S. foreign policy in the years since Joe Biden's been our president. Now, the Biden-Harris administration's handling of the situation in the Middle East has already been under scrutiny, and Harris's interview has added to concerns now about the administration's strategy, if there is any, in dealing with this increasing threat of conflict in the region. And when it comes to further conflict, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at skirmishes? A skirmish here, a skirmish there, here a skirmish, there a skirmish, everywhere a skirmish, skirmish. Or are we looking at all-out nuclear war? I think it depends on what the hotheads over on that side of the world deem necessary. But I mean, again, you look at Israel, you have a nation there that is surrounded on three sides by people who hate them and want them all dead. And on the fourth side, water. I would not call that an advantageous position. And this nation of ours really needs to get off the dime and make a commitment one way or the other. Either wash your hands of the Israeli situation or dig in. And that's not going to happen until Donald Trump resumes work in the White House. And of course, the critics of Kamala Harris, and they are many, you don't have to go very far to find one, even on the left. The critics have pointed out that her remarks did very little to reassure either Israel or U.S. allies about America's commitment to maintaining stability in the Middle East. There's been no direction there whatsoever. No discernible direction. And while the administration continues to navigate these tensions, let me take that back. The administration's not navigating them. The administration is avoiding them. And they remain noncommittal. And then you add Harris's performance on 60 Minutes, and that alone sparked a fresh wave of questions about her preparedness to handle complex foreign policy issues. But here again, I go back to what I said earlier in today's blogcast, and that is the deep state, wants Harris as our president because that's the only way Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are going to be able to continue to run the country. To the Comedy Corner with Brad Tissell.
We took our daughter to a movie a couple months ago. I like the movies, right? We're at the movies, and the lights come down in the movie, and it gets real dark in the movies. And then on the screen it says, please turn off your cell phone, right? And my wife panics and goes, oh no, it's in the car. Even my daughter's like, is mommy okay? What just happened? Did she hit her head? Do I still get to go to camp? It's a $5,000 camp. And am I gonna hurt her over this? No. I was very concerned. I said, what should we do? Which is when her brain came back. See, the problem is, what we say is dumb is 90% either they don't know, or they just that spark that they need, that one piece of information isn't there, right? And something has to jog that information. And when I said to my wife, what should we do? Her brain came back. And she said, shut up! I'm a jerk because she's an idiot. And now we've gotten into your marriage, haven't we, over here? This oh, honey, you've done that. You're dumb. We love you. We're going to be so nice to you. I can't do it anymore, though, man. That guy, I just can't see the pain. I can't see the hate. I can't see the scared and the sad. And it's tough. It's tough. Like you go to Walmart or something, and it is frustrating. They're not getting the job done sometime, right? They don't know. But you can't hurt them, man. Please don't hurt them, right? Okay, quick story. My daughter and I were at Walmart, right? And I know I'm bagging on Walmart, but I think they can handle it. So anyway, so we're trying to check out, and we literally have Lulu, the one-eyebrowed Neanderthal cashier. Oh, my gosh. This poor thing, her DNA did not spin all the way to the top. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but if this was a lighthouse, there would be so many steps missing that the bulb is out and the ships are hitting the shore. I don't know. Okay, a lot of you are not getting that. Now, what I'm doing right now is, as a comedian, when I used to hurt people, if I made fun of somebody enough, I could take away their humanity and then be mean to them. What's the big deal? Can't do that now. Can't do it. And the problem we were having with this lovely lady was the magic glass. You know the magic glass? And he's like, oh, could you talk to them? They take the item when you check out and they wave it over the magic glass. It goes, boom! And then they put it in a bag. Barcode. Barcode. Well, nobody had explained to her about the barcode. They just said wave, and she thought the magic was that it didn't always work. And so I'm looking at the barcode, and it's under her palm on some of the stuff. It's on the other end, and I'm getting frustrated. But I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to hurt her. Two reasons. One, my daughter's with me. I don't want her to see me acting like a jerk in public. If you ever wondered why your kid's a jerk, it's probably because you're a jerk, okay? Second thing is, she was nice. She was sweet. When we're mean to nice people, when you see people mean to nice people, it tears at my soul, man. She was like, well, I'm so sorry, honey. This machine's funny. It's just funny. I wanted to go, oh, no, you're dumb, honey. I love you. I love you. Hey, hey, see that? Go get it. Oh, yeah, there's another one. Okay. But that's mean. It's mean. I now help people. I do the right thing. She goes like that. I go, boop, and she sets it down.
Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today and every day just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.